Live from the new Life Center studios in Coconut Creek, Florida, and Phoenix, Arizona, it's Nothing Worthwhile, giving you the latest news in pop culture, sports, entertainment, and professional wrestling. You know, all the crap you don't care about. Here's Evan Moody and Andrew Gruthius.
After these messages.
You guys suck. Like to,
but do you have any opinion on what Sasha Banks and Naomi did when they walked out of a WWE during a live event? I'm a veteran. I've walked away from a live event.
One, I haven't been there because I left after Backlash. And I know what it's like to jump on social media and read these headlines that are so far from the truth. So I don't know what happened, but what I can say is I can't imagine never wrestling Sasha again. That would be hard for me to compartmentalize.
Right.
Because, like, we started together. She's my Ricky Steamboat. What my dad always tells her that. And then with Trin, like, we just had a hell of a match on SmackDown. And I'm like, oh,
I knew the day would come when you were going to pay me back. You can't let the contents of that safe fall into the wrong hands.
Track them, find them, kill them.
You're going to need more men if you expect to get out of here alive.
You're terminated.
In your dreams.
Here we go!
Is bigger than this car.
Shoot something!
You're not doing what I think you're doing.
Yeah, I am.
The Expendables 2.
You're gonna need a new plane.
In theaters August 17th. Oh, 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 oh.
Van Damn It, a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. Here's Evan Moody and Andrew Gruthius.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit
fried. Fade, here we go. Welcome to Nothing Worthwhile, episode number 122. We are back to back on the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. As we are doing it Van Damme style today, as we look at our guy Jean-Claude Van Damme in the last of the Action Heroes All-Star Game, better known as The Expendables 2. We are both live here in Phoenix, Arizona, live from New U Life Center. The other guy and my tag team partner for today's podcast, well, he's based out of Coconut Creek, but he is with us here in Phoenix, Arizona. He is not expendable. Andrew Gruthius, how the hell are you, my friend?
I'm not expendable.
You are not very expendable.
I'm very good. It's been a wonderful few days here in sunny and breezy Arizona with the Moody Verdugo clan getting ready to tie the knot, the proverbial knot, as it were. It's been a lot of fun down here so far. We are at the New You Life Center, where we have both just received beautiful facials, beautiful teeth whitening. We've had our pores sucked. So you want what we got? You got to come here. And we are in this beautiful, absolutely stunning break room here at the New You Life Center. Our home office is nothing worthwhile. So I'm very privileged to be here with you and doing this live. The second show in a row live.
Yes. Last time we were live from Coconut Creek, Florida. We are here in Phoenix, Arizona. This morning, Andrew and I had a day of beauty.
Yeah, and it was beautiful.
A very feminine day of beauty. We went to V's Barbershop.
Yes.
My guy Jesse and Gru got the old school hot shave and a haircut, and I got my beard trimmed up and shaved, and we are ready to go. Then made our way to New Life Center for whitening and waxing and preening and prompting, and as I'm trying to be remade to look handsome before the wedding.
It's a tough gig.
It's a tough gig.
For both of us.
Tough gig. But very glad to have Andrew, my best man, here in Phoenix, Arizona for the wedding.
Best man, the better man.
That's right. Listen.
Shemmy, wedding singer, remember?
I do. But listen, enough of this wedding stuff. Let's get to what's really, really important.
Yeah.
So before we go ahead and give you our thoughts on The Expendables 2, let's check out the latest news on our favorite 80s action stars. It's time for Van Damme Spanning the Universe.
Van Damme Spanning the Universe. Yo!
A Group Spanning the Universe is brought to you by New You Life Center. Begin a new you. We're here live. Check out all of their wonderful laser treatments at www.newyoulifecenters.com. That's NUYOU lifecenters.com. Give them a call, 602-274-0068. Tell them that Moody Group sent you and receive a big 15% off your first service. New You Life Center, restore your youthfulness with confidence. Let's start that new you. Free consultation, customized services, feel good in an oh-so-stress-free environment. Wait, was that another? Oh, wait, anyway. That's New You Life Center. Gru, the dust has settled in regard to the Oscars. By the way, what did you think with John Cena monkeying around in the nude at the Oscars?
I'd like to know whose idea was that, and I hope they either lose their job or they have to make some kind of restitution. What was the purpose of that, and why would he do that? And come on, John.
Like, yeah, I think it was in regards to, like, they had a streaker moment, yeah, 35 yeah. years ago. So they were
50 years ago.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, it was so. Now, I didn't watch the show.
I didn't see it either.
But of course, I saw the replay of it. Whatever. And I'm surprised there's not more ridiculing going on. He pretty much emerged from that unscathed. When I saw it, I was like, oh, he's going to be answering questions about this for the next 10 years. It seems to have disappeared. So, I guess the joke's on us, but I didn't find it funny. I found it pointless. It was silly. So I don't know what made him say, you know what, this is a good idea. It was not a good idea.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes, I was kind of sad to see, in a sense, John Cena monkeying around in the nude for a very cheap laugh.
Yeah.
But, Gru, I digress. The infamous satirical Razzie Awards have selected their Ooh. Dishonorable picks and awarded the worst films and acting roles for the year. The worst picture was Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Didn't see that one, but I remember being interested in seeing it just because it was so out of whack. It would have been, it seemed like completely...
Yeah, they're coming with this Mickey Mouse as well. I think when the rights or somehow with the trademarking falls through.
Something like that.
They're doing these B-level movies
right.
with all these wonderful...
You're right.
With all these wonderful film actors. Worst director was Rhys Frake Waterfield, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Worst actor was John Voight.
Piglet?
I guess so. John Voight won the worst actor for Mercy. Worst actress was Megan Fox for Johnny and Clyde. Worst Supporting Actress was again Megan Fox for The Expendables 4 and Sylvester Stallone. Worst Supporting Actor for Expendables 4. Gru, Sly wins a Razzie. I don't know. Any thoughts?
That's nothing new for him. That's a badge of honor, the Razzies. I guess he's probably has the most out of anybody, I would think, at this point. But the one that confuses me is that John Voight one. That tells me something about the Razzies. Because I've never heard of that movie.
I've never heard of it either.
And usually the Razzies, as you could tell with the other movies, they're for high-profile movies. So to me, the Razzies is going after John Voight because of his political things.
Probably.
And that's just why. Why do that? You know, it's like they're trying to delegitimize themselves even further by making a pick like that. Number one, John Voight's one of the best actors who ever lived.
Are you familiar with Ray Donovan? Because he's phenomenal in Ray Donovan.
Do I agree with one thing he says in the real world? Absolutely not. Do I love him as an actor? Did I idolize him growing up? Absolutely. For him to be in this thing screams like we're excommunicating John Voight. He's no longer one of our besties. And I hate when that pisses me off.
Well,
pisses me off, but he's allowed to. They're not.
That's to be expected. Now they touch upon Expendables 4, so we're covering Expendables 2 today. Right. So let's get your thoughts real quick. Where did we go wrong with Expendables 4 versus Expendables 1, 2, and perhaps 3?
Well, ironically, the biggest thing for me, the whole reason that I didn't even see it, is because the winner of the supporting actor for Razzie wasn't the star of the movie. You know, I'm not going to see Rambo if Rambo's only in 3 minutes of it. There's excuse the pun. There's nothing worthwhile for me about it.
Okay.
So I had no interest in seeing. You know, what am I seeing? The Transporter 3 with Jason Statham. I have no interest in that. I had no interest in the Transporter 1 or 2. As far as I'm concerned, without Stallone is the Expendables. He created it, and you know, so I'm going to chalk it up to that.
Did Stallone make any public comments as to why the lesser role, or is he done with that role? I'm just curious if there's been any inclination as to why they put him in a small cameo, or they got rid of the, I don't know. I've never seen Expendables 4. I don't know the plot. I do know that he's in it minimally.
I'm just pontificating. Is that a word?
That is a word.
Yeah. But I'm going to say that he had no interest. They begged him, threw a bunch of money at him for a couple days' work, and he said, okay, no one's going to see this anyway, which is kind of true. And he pretty much, even though he got a Razzie, he still escaped kind of unscathed, because he's moving forward with like Tulsa King and even, God help us, the Family Stallone. I'm not interested in that, neither are you. But
no, I've not seen
one. But I'm going to guess that probably played a part in why he chose to, but he probably thought it was a piece of shit, which it is. I haven't seen it, but I've heard nothing good about it. So, you know, I can't, but he hasn't said anything, which surprises me, because usually he's pretty outspoken. So I don't know.
Gru, last Wednesday, Deadline got a scoop on a project involving Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger is scheduled to team up with Reacher actor Alan Ritchson for a family holiday movie titled The Man with the Bag. The project comes from director Adam Shankman, known for The Wedding Planner, A Walk to Remember, and Hairspray, with a script written by Alan Rice. The premise for this Christmas-themed movie is as follows. Santa's magic bag is stolen. He turns to his naughty list to find Vance, a former thief, to help him get it back. All right, I won't crush it yet. Along with his daughter Santa and a group of misfit elves, Vance will have to pull off the greatest heist of his life to save Christmas. This actually marks the first movie role for Schwarzenegger in 5 years, since lending his star power to Kung Fury 2 and what? Terminator Dark Fate in 2019. That was probably a voice role. The Austrian Oak has recently been starring in the Netflix action comedy series FUBAR. Meanwhile, Ritchson, of course, is vaulted into the spotlight thanks to his starring role and his absolutely ridiculous physique in Prime Video's Reacher. I've seen a few of those, and they're pretty good. Along with a major villainous role in last year's Fast X. Couldn't make it through Fast X, so
I haven't seen one of those.
I couldn't make it through. I got maybe about 45 minutes in and shut it off in a fit of anger. Gorilla, Arnie is back with another family-style Christmas movie. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not really into Arnold Schwarzenegger doing that kind of movie. He's kind of done it. So I kind of I could name five other things I'd rather him do than you know, a sort of what sounds to be like, you know, another token Christmas movie. But at the end of the day, he's still Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he's still an incredibly endearing performer. So he's one of the best, greatest entertainers who's ever lived, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
And just always, there's something always interesting about watching him. I also do like Alan Ritchson.
Yeah, he's good.
Now, I have seen nothing of his. I have not seen Jack Reacher. I've not seen anything, but I did see a recent movie in the, did I see it in the, yeah, I saw it in the theater. It was called Ordinary Angels. It was a faith-based movie, and he's a very heavy Christian.
I was not aware of that.
But he played I think it was a true story, he played a widowed father whose youngest daughter was very sick, and Hilary Swank plays like...
You know what? I believe I saw the trailer on YouTube.
It was good.
Good.
It was good. I had never seen or heard about him before, and I thought he really stood out. And to be able to do that...
Was he still pretty pumped up in
this
movie?
Oh my God, forget about it. Yeah. He's huge, but... And that's the only thing that kind of like diminished his performance a little bit, because it just didn't seem weird that a guy like this should be suffering the way he is. But he acted the hell out of it, I have to say. And to be able to do that when you're opposite a two-time Academy Award winner, that's something to be said. So the talent is there. And when the talent is there, it can work. So yeah.
Good team up. And I think, you know, the Christmas thing, Arnie is done before. So sounds like a cute premise. Don't know if I'll see it, but I won't kill it.
Oh, you'll go see my movie.
And, Richson is that Jack Reacher. I've seen a couple of episodes. Marie, we've dabbled in it a little bit. It's good. It's good stuff.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Good stuff. Gru, last Tuesday, Chuck Norris celebrated another trip around the sun, turning 84 years young.
What?
Yes, 84.
Chuck Norris is 84.
Yes, he's still in fantastic shape. Wow. The martial arts icon took to Instagram. I did see this to share a video with his 1.6 million followers where he was seen throwing some jabs at a heavy bag, quoting, "Chuck, you know, I'm 84 today, but I feel like I'm 48. hit the laugh track. Norris said with a laugh before concluding with, "God bless you all." The action icon also did get plenty of birthday love from celebrity friends like Dolph Lundgren, who said, "Happy birthday, Chuck. You look terrific, Dolph." Australian TV journalist Carl Stefanovic added, "Chuck Norris doesn't have a birthday. A birthday has Chuck Norris."
I love those. Those
Happy
are great.
Chuck Norris Day, Happy legend. Chuck Norris Day. I miss you. TikTok stars the Hannisons added, "Chuck Norris, the only person to punch a cyclops between the eye." Trainer Scott Francis joked he threw 4,566 punches on this video, but our eyes only let us see a few. And there was some other funny Chuck Norris meme-y type stuff on Instagram. Gru actually looks pretty great for his age. I myself was really shocked to learn that the Chuckster is 84 years old. Boy, we're getting old. Gru, thoughts on the action legend turning 84?
Like you just said, that shocks me. I really thought he was more of a contemporary of those guys, but he's almost a decade older than like Stallone and Schwarzenegger. And you know what? I have seen him recently. He does look good. I would like to see him do some more. I mean, he doesn't have to do it the way he did it before, but he did a little something in Expendables 2, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, a little something.
But he is another entertaining guy who's always fun to watch, even though he's really not a good actor. I don't think he would ever really claim to be. But he's still Chuck fucking Norris, and I would love to see him more.
Okay. So I pulled Jean-Claude Van Damme's filmography.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first movie, even before No Retreat, No Surrender, is Breaking, where apparently he's a dancer in some kind of scene. The second movie is Missing in Action, where he has a credit as a stuntman.
Really?
So when we do the next go-around of Van Damme movies, you want to start off with Missing in Action?
Well, I think that's a great idea, because I happen to like that movie. I've seen it. Have you ever seen it? Have you seen? I've seen actually all
long
three.
Long ago, long.
One
ago.
Of them I saw in the theater. The third one.
Long time ago.
Yeah, but I would love to do Missing in Action. That'd be fun.
All right, good. So we'll do a Jean-Claude Van Damme, not
Norris,
Van Damme, Chuck Norris.
Oh, it is Van Damme. Yeah. He's in it. He's in it.
I have the entire filmography. That'll be our next go around. A group for pro wrestling, the WWE, is letting us know who will be in their Hall of Fame class of 2024. So far, we have names such as the Great Wiseman, Paul Heyman. Great, great addition. Mm-hmm. Female legend, Bull Nakano. We were together. We talked about it briefly, but let's put it on the podcast. WWE announced last Tuesday that none other than Muhammad Ali will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2024. Ceremony groups is going to take place April 5th during WrestleMania 40 weekend in Philadelphia. Ali died in June of 2016 at the age of 74. Muhammad Ali was the special guest referee in the main event of the first WrestleMania, a tag team match featuring Hulk Hogan and Mr. T versus Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. That wasn't Ali's only foray into sports entertainment. You may have read about this, and so did I. June of 1976, Ali faced Japanese legend Antonio Inoki in the War of the Worlds exhibition match in Tokyo. That was a seminal event that sort of was a precursor to the explosion of MMA. In front of 32,000 spectators, Ali versus Inoki was ruled a 15-round draw. It was broadcast via closed circuit. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Days? To approximately 32,000 people at Shea Stadium.
Wow.
The original home of the New York Mets at the time. Ali will join Inoki in the WWE Hall of Fame. In 1990, Muhammad Ali entered the International Boxing Hall of Fame in its debut class. He won the heavyweight championship three times, most notably in a six-round TKO victory over Sonny Liston in 1964. And an eighth round KO of George Foreman in 1974. Ali won an Olympic gold medal in 1960. I did say some strange thoughts about this, but let's get your thoughts. Andrew, thoughts on the greatest Muhammad Ali entering the WWE Hall of Fame?
I mean, look, Muhammad Ali is the type of person who can be at home in any Hall of Fame anywhere for anything, to be honest. I don't quite get this. Does he have a connection to Philadelphia? He might.
That's interesting.
There might be a connection to Philadelphia.
But, you know, my thing is, if that's where you're going to go, and I think that's what they should have done, I would have made this not exclusive, but my premise would have been to go ECW heavy with the Hall of Fame.
I
would have inducted Taz, Tommy Dreamer, maybe a female wrestler. You know, there could be even others, Sabu, Sandman. I don't know about the Sandman, but I think Sabu would have been a legitimate good choice. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at the, you know, forget about Ali for a second, because like I said, he can be at home anywhere, but even all the other, like, they probably should have just, like you said, kept it either all ECW talent being inducted or just give the night to Heyman and have ECW basically have all its people there. But
do you feel like there's Heyman and then sort of a massive drop-off?
Yeah, so, like, they're going to need star power to, like, induct. Like, that's why I think I heard rumors that they were looking to get Stallone. But even that, what is he going
to... Stallone, I think it was... They're trying to get him to do something for WrestleMania. But as I said on the last podcast, talks have dwindled from what
I
read.
There was
a lot of interest at first. I think what you had said, I agree with. Let him do the Kevin Hart opening package, Philly, you know, really focus on the Philly, that sort of vibe of Philadelphia and Rocky connection to really pump up the crowd. So I don't think Stallone's going
to
be there.
So who are you going to get to induct all of these people that is going to have the crowd? Because they need to have the crowd.
But I think it's even it matters less now that it's part of the SmackDown. It's SmackDown Hall of Fame. So you don't have to sell tickets on just the Hall of Fame alone. So fans are going to go in Philly to the final SmackDown, however good or bad, because it's the final show.
Well, we were at the one last year.
Okay, fine. Well, do you agree with my premise, though? I think it matters less these days because of... You're getting a combo package, two for one. If the Hall of Fame was a standalone event, which I think there's enough there for them to still do it, but they've moved to this sort of format, which is fine. I think it matters even less. They're going to have some big names, but I don't think it. I don't think the stakes are there like it used to be when the Hall of Fame was a standalone nightly event.
I agree completely. However, I am very excited for the U.S. Express to be.
Now listen,
this might not be the year perfect, but
well, why?
I am still agreeing with you. It should be
All right, so they're not doing the Philly thing. So they're doing
right.
Okay, so I think
Thunderbolt Patterson.
Well,
I think you
have two. I mean, U.S. Express is strong.
Yes.
And I do think Bull Nakano, I don't know a lot about her. I remember in the early days of the WWF, she was like, you know, she was a real powerhouse, I think, Japanese female wrestler that came to the WWE, WWF on a couple of stints, kind of ahead of her time because she was, well, this is really before the age of the sort of beauty, you know, diva kind of thing. But she was a real
Wendy Richter era?
I think so.
All right, then that's why I don't know her, because we're literally Wendy Richter and Moolah were the only female wrestlers that I knew.
You know, the Thunderbolt Patterson. Listen, I'm sure these are a very worthy inductee. I don't know a lot about them either. Have they announced? Okay, Muhammad. You'll probably get a decent name for Muhammad.
I would think anybody. For anybody to say no to induct Muhammad Ali into anything would be foolish, I think. But what are they going to do? What are they going to go get, like a Billy Crystal? You know,
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't see that.
Guys like you and me would probably like that, but I don't think the SmackDown crowd is going to be like, oh my God! I don't think that's happening. So I don't know who would do it.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but
Frazier's dead.
Yeah.
Foreman? Maybe George Foreman? That would be a good one.
That could be. Could be.
Yeah.
Let's pontificate a little bit here. They've really not announced presenters. So who's the Andy Gruthier's choice to induct Paul Heyman?
I probably agree with a lot of the people out there and say that it's Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm saying that as a prediction, not an opinion. Meaning that...
please. Give me...
Who
would you like and who are you...
Who would I like?
I think it's
going to be Stone Cold. I would like it to be an amalgam of ECW guys. I want Bully Ray, Tommy Dreamer, all the guys that you mentioned. They should all be a part. This guy was so monumental to the business. It's a bigger job for just one person. So that's what I would like. I would like a group induction, but I think you're probably just going to get basically Stone Cold.
Yeah, you're not getting a group induction. That's
okay,
too sloppy.
Then you'll get Stone Cold.
So my thing was probably going to be, I'll say CM Punk.
CM you Punk. Think that's where they're going to go?
That's who I'd like to see.
Okay.
I think he's amazing on the mic. You're very big on utilizing injured talent, so that's another way to utilize him.
Agreed.
And he was the original Paul Heyman guy in the modern WWE.
Correct.
And I think he's a bit of a wrestling historian. Nothing against Stone Cold.
Great speaker.
I think he's would be the most entertaining and a fitting choice. I agree with you. I think ECW would have been really best and most endearing, but you're not going to get a panel of guys inducting one guy.
But you know what, though? This is interesting because I actually don't care much who inducts him. I'm more looking forward to his speech because he is the greatest talker. He might be the greatest talker in the history of wrestling.
I think you can make a case that he is.
And there is no doubt in my mind that he is going to use this to boost business. And that's exactly what he should do because that's how he was built. I think he's going to do it in character mostly. I think he'll have some moments of, you know, like of, you know, true reflection. But I think for the most part, he's going to be there to entertain. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, it'll be entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be reflective and real. But yes, he'll finish up with some kind of note to get the fans pumped up for WrestleMania.
Yeah,
absolutely.
My question for you is, what do you, and I don't want to go any further, honestly, because I don't know anything about the other two, Patterson and what's her name? Bull
Nakano.
Yeah, I don't say that with any disrespect. I just don't know enough about them. But who inducts the U.S. Express? Who's left for them?
Oof.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Dallas?
Maybe.
Not much star power there, but it does connect.
Maybe. Maria, who do you think? Can she be heard right now? She's off mic.
She can be heard.
I can be heard.
Yeah. Well, just lean over your fiance's shoulder there.
Do you want to do our...
Yeah, should we do it right now?
Let's do it right now.
Come
take a seat.
You got it.
All right, so... Well, come back to Wyndham and Rotunda.
Well, I mean... I don't think... I think it's clear Bray Wyatt's not going in this year.
Yes, I think that's been announced.
So he's not going in.
Yeah.
They are releasing a new documentary about him, Mortal, which we'll hopefully see, and we'll talk about it another time. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Maybe Bo Dallas. I don't know if Barry Windham's family who's left.
They're all part of the same family. Like Windham, like all, I mean, his father's Blackjack Mulligan's gone. I think that Kendall Windham, were they real with it? But nobody knows who Kendall Windham
is. Kendall his son?
I have no idea. But Windham.
Barry O?
He's gone too.
Is he really?
That's the way, yeah.
Get out of here.
Not that long ago, but maybe like five
Did he sue the
ago.
WWF?
Yeah, I don't know if he sued, but he definitely brought allegations against him. He's on. You could YouTube his. Donahue appearance with Vince McMahon.
Well, we're waiting for Marie. So tell me, was that something to do with Mel Phillips? Like inappropriate?
Yeah, it was behavior? Mel Phillips, Pat Patterson, all those. Remember that brief period back there?
It's a small world after all. It's a small.
But Wyndham, he is Rotundo's brother-in-law. Mm. So he was Bray's uncle and Bo Dallas's uncle. So. They could keep it in the family.
Real quick, before we go to the next segment, does Wyndham and Rotunda, did they deserve to be inducted as singles?
I think IRS does. Wyndham is already in as a horseman.
I know. I never said. Don't worry. I got you.
Wyndham is already in as a horseman, so this will be his second. And he never really broke through as a singles. So I would say no to him, but I would say yes to IRS. Absolutely. He was around for a while. He always got heat. Him and the Million Dollar Corporation. I mean, he was great and he lived the gimmick. So the answer is absolutely. Rotundo should be in. In fact, I would argue that he should be in as IRS before Wyndham and Rotundo because IRS had way more staying power than Wyndham and Rotundo.
What do you think about IRS? we have Marie here, New U Life Center, our beautiful bride-to-be. Why don't you tell everybody real quick about New U Life Center, where you're located, a little bit about, you got a plug?
Yes, New U Life Center here in the sunny state of Phoenix, Arizona.
Sunny state?
Yeah, sunny
state. City of Phoenix.
Yes. Yeah,
state of Arizona.
State of Arizona, that's what I said.
She's in a little bit of a wedding blur right now. Her head's in the clouds.
I got the wedding brain. New U Life Center, medical aesthetics, cosmetic lasers, and wellness center. We do it all. Everything from Botox fillers, laser treatments, laser hair reduction. We do
hair reduction. Who would want hair reduction? Do you have hair replenish?
You know what? We actually do. We have hair restoration.
Because I could use some of that.
Yes. All of us do.
I could use. Yeah.
We do a bunch of everything in the world of aesthetics and wellness. We even do medical weight loss. We do B12 shots, IV therapies, and more.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Sounds like a heck of a place.
Can I move in?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, do you want to hear your new jingle that we put together just for you for this day?
Let's set this up. So, see, this we got to give credit to Stephen Gruthius.
Yes.
Andrew Gruthius' brother said, I'd like a new segment. So, we have come up with the Nothing Worthwhile Celebrity Plastic Surgery Game.
Okay.
And so, Gru, hit the jingle jangle.
Let's cue it up.
New U Life Center presents the Celebrity Plastic Surgery Game with Marie Moody.
All right, the Celebrity Plastic Surgery Game is brought to you by New U Life Center. Meet the New U team at www.nuulifecenter.com. That's N-U-Y-O-U, lifecenter.com. You can check out the photos and biographies of the team. That's Marie, Dr. Knobloch, Erica, Brian, Shelby, and the rest of the New U staff. The New U website, you can follow New U Life Center on Instagram at New U Life Center. Take advantage of their specials and monthly giveaway. Check out all of their medical weight loss programs and give them a call at 602.
Ozempic.
274-0068. Tell Moody Grew set you receive a big 15% off your first service. New Life Center, Phoenix Premier Med Spa for Botox, fillers, lasers, aesthetics, weight loss, and hormone options.
And we're not only part of the New You family, we're also clients.
That's right.
Yes,
that's
right. You are.
I did, I did Dermaplane, where they take like a medical grade razor and scrape off all that dead, decaying stuff.
They did that to me too.
Yeah, there's a chunk on the floor that's right there from Andrew Grupius. Let's sweep it up.
Yeah, that might be the cure for hepatitis on there.
And Grew got a nice facial. That was, what was that called? Skin wipe. Tell everybody what.
So it cleanses, it exfoliates, and moisturizes.
Sounds
through
wonderful.
Vacuuming, through using oxygen and water. It's amazing treatment.
It feels like
cleans
like,
up the
it
pores.
Feels like a car wash on your face.
Right.
If actually that's
right.
the best
it
way.
It really
of,
does. It really
did
does.
You enjoy it?
Yes, I'm still enjoying it. Can you feel the silky smoothness of
you
my
look,
pores?
Well,
look,
I did your first skin wave a few months ago, probably over 6 months ago now, and I can tell you, you had a ton of clogged pores all along here. They're gone.
Pores are unclogged.
They are unclogged. And
that is, you
I
know what?
I want to put that in the liner notes for the podcast. Pores are unclogged.
That's going right in. That's going right in.
So vibrant right now.
Oh, vibrant. And we're using SAT vocabulary as well.
Very nebulous.
Weight loss and hormone optimization. Clearly, Vince McMahon does not need hormone optimization. He's a horny and a little minky. A big Van Damme. Thank you to New You Life Center. Okay, so I'm going to put here on my phone. This is okay. So this is our celebrity for today. Is going to be the gentleman who we saw in concert a couple of days ago, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh.
Did you like the show?
I love the show. First Bruce Springsteen concert ever in my life. And Evan did tell me, babe, when I take you to this concert, I'm telling you, you're going to love it. And I got to say, hands down, out of all the concerts I've been to in all my life, the best live concert performance ever.
Are you really saying that?
God,
or are you being
right.
truthful?
He beat you too.
Just let it leave it there.
Okay.
Don't give her any room
even
to bring up
75.
Like Cardi B or any of these things that you
even
guys go to. Not Sammy Hagar in the Circle, no?
Unbelievable. Nonstop, 2 hours and 45 minutes of just pure rock and roll music. It was full of everything for me. I just was so enthralled with him and his band. E Street Band. It was unbelievable.
I was actually a little bit confused because I thought it was Tilda Swinton in the E Street Band. New York Post. How dare you? All right, this is a picture.
How dare you?
Yeah. This is a picture of Bruce.
Yeah.
Would you say, Gru, this is around born in the USA?
That is exactly. Yeah, that is
when
right.
I was born 84, in the USA.
1984, 1985. So that's like 40 years ago. At
all right,
this
so
point,
take a look real close.
That's
so
40 years ago.
I got it.
All right, now I'm going to show you.
All right.
Okay, now I'm going to show you.
Had he had any work done yet?
No.
Okay.
Here's Bruce today. You can expand the picture if you like.
Now that is circa 2023-24.
Okay. So this is currently Bruce today.
Right.
What do you think? Has he had work done? And if so, what is your best educated guess?
No.
What?
I'm gonna tell you.
You don't think? I think he's had work done.
Where?
That can't be his real hair.
What? Why not?
I don't know.
I feel like he's had hair plugs.
No, he has not.
Really?
Mm-mm.
That's his natural hair?
Yes. For me, and I'm not a professional with hair plugs or what have you or hair, but that is a natural way.
I think he's had it done well where it looks more natural.
Being able to get up close and personal, I will say... With my eye, aesthetic eye, no.
Right.
And then...
I want to go back because he has had periods where he had receding hair.
Yeah.
Right?
So that doesn't really make sense unless...
You should have shown him more of a picture like 94.
Did he come to New Year Life Center and get the hair replacement? Whatever.
No, but you know what? It looks very natural. If he did have anything done, it's very natural. It does not look like he had...
Nothing on the face?
No.
Nothing.
Well, let me tell you about the face. Now, as we know, we age because we lose collagen, right? In our face, in our body. Everything starts going down to the ground.
Really?
I'll take your word for it.
I tell you, he's aging gracefully.
Okay, but you don't think he's had nothing done with his skin?
I do not think he's had anything done. No.
Wow.
That shocks me.
That really shocks me. Well, then I guess.
I will say maybe this is a picture, maybe if it was taken in between a Botox session, but I do not believe he's done anything with fillers, with even lasers or anything like that.
He definitely colors his hair, though. He's 75 years old, and we've seen him with white hair.
He has white hair now. At the concert, he had white hair.
Yeah. That's only several months ago.
Yeah. So he must color his hair.
But that's all we got,
great.
Huh?
I think he looks great. Wow. I mean, he's aging
very stunned.
Gracefully.
Jesus, really this
stunned.
Guy, like...
I don't think he's had anything done. I'm going to ask my team. What do you girls think? Here's Bruce back in 1985. Look at his high cheekbones there. Okay? Yeah. Take a look at this. Has he had work done?
No.
No.
No way.
What?
I don't think so.
There's a volume loss for sure.
There you go. Told you.
Whoa, yeah. Dominique.
Wait, what do you mean by volume loss? What does that mean?
Okay, so here see his cheekbones?
Yeah.
Very high, full of collagen.
Right.
Right? Youthfulness.
Yeah.
Here.
They're kind of sunken in a little bit, but that's natural, though.
That's why we're saying he has all.
Dude is just charmed.
Well, he's
not fair. Well, not fair. All the talent, all the money, all the natural looks.
He went on
this bullshit.
Well, he went on record on Howard Stern and claimed he did not have any.
All right. Well, the expert.
I believe it's true.
The leading expert. The leading experts in Arizona.
So smooth for a 75-year-old man. Breast implants.
That he might have. He did strip down the other night.
Right. Yeah, he did have.
He did show us what was going on. Though,
by the way, okay, and he unbuttoned his shirt, and he had pecs. Don't tell me he's not on TRT or something.
He Bruce. Could be.
Okay.
What is TRT?
Testosterone replacement.
Yeah, HRT.
But is that's an inner thing? That's not
that's
so we're all on crap like that.
Yeah, right.
You know,
is he on Mounjaro?
No, absolutely.
He doesn't. He never needed that. He never needed that. You bastard.
Yeah. And
Stevie was on Ozempic. He had to have been.
Steven
Van Zandt, his guitar player.
Yeah, he lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, he was like morbidly obese, like 10 days before the tour, and then he shows up.
He has big white chompers. They look too big for his.
They were
Ozempic or.
Yeah, he looked like.
Or surgery,
I don't think he had surgery. I think he was definitely on that stuff.
Steven Van Zandt?
He could be. Yeah, he had the Ozempic face for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because his face was sunken in. He had those big fake teeth.
Yes,
but he's also 70, 74, 75. So
he looks really good.
He looks good. Yeah, he's thin.
They all look good.
Thin for the first time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got our answer. The first one. You know what? I think we're going to have to do like.
I am really shocked. Honestly.
I am shocked too.
Gru and I have talked, and we have both said that we thought he had hair plugs.
No.
I would have bet the farm.
And I would have thought.
No.
A facelift or Botox or something to keep his skin. I mean, his skin is. Pretty darn smooth.
A lot of that could be genetics too. You know, he could thank his parents for that.
I'm gonna go meet his daughter. How old is she? What? She's like 25. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that.
She's looking at me like I'm a. All right, fine. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Sure does. Now this is.
We're getting a third opinion.
Yeah, Desiree. Bruce Springsteen.
1984.
Bruce Springsteen now. Has he had work done before?
We said no.
Yeah, no. Oh.
Erica from New York Life Center. At Erica _.
I need an unbiased.
No.
You ruined the whole thing.
Really?
That's the truth, right?
I'm looking for a smooth forehead. I don't see one. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And he's naturally.
See, she
aging.
Didn't listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We have our own aesthetic guy.
Maybe a penis pump? Edit that.
We'll have to. That'll be in the next show. They remember they had a curfew, so he didn't have time to strip all the way down. He just had time to take off the top.
His show was unbelievable.
That's something, though. That I am. And you know what? That's I'm glad to hear that. Quite honestly,
I'm not.
No,
I thought he
You're just a jealous bastard.
I'm very jealous. He has great genetics. As my dad,
have great genetics.
My dad once pulled me aside and said, "Us Moody's, we're not great athletes. We're not great students. We're not particularly good looking. We were not very well endowed."
What do we have, Dad? Yeah, what do we have?
The genetic. All right. Thank you, Marie. At New Year Life Center, Marie Moody.
For having me, guys.
We may make this a running segment.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll see you again soon. We got something coming up. Not sure
yet. On Sunday.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that. Somebody's getting married. I want to go home and watch the Muppets Take Manhattan. When Miss Piggy married Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Wow, what a segment.
Yeah,
I'm really shocked.
I am too.
Let me ask you. Forget the New Year Life Center crew for a second. Do you think Bruce has had something done? Honestly.
Yeah, I do. But what do I know? You know, I mean, for the same reasons I mentioned, it doesn't make sense. And he looks different. Like my dad. Look at my dad.
I think his hair plug. He's had hair plugs, but they've done very. Oops. They've been done very tastefully. So they give him the widow's peak to look like a naturally aging guy would look like, but it's still pretty full. Wow, I'm really shocked.
I'm surprised too, but power to him. And I guess he was telling the truth.
You okay?
Which he's known to do. So, good for him. I wonder. So now we got to think about where we're going with this next week.
We'll figure it out. I have an idea. Gru, let's talk about the Expendables. Let's talk about the Expendables too.
Wait a second. It's only 45 minutes in. We're getting to the main event.
Let's get to it.
Oh my God. That's a new thing.
It's a 2012 action film directed by Simon West, written by Richard Wenk and Sylvester Stallone. Wenk. Based on a story by Ken Kaufman, David Augusto, and Wenk. It is the sequel to The Expendables 2010. In the second installment in the Expendables film series. The name of the director, Simon West. It's one, when I read it, it's a familiar one. Gru, you know anything about Mr. West?
Did he direct Con Air?
He did.
All right, that's the only other movie I'm familiar with of his.
Simon West was born July 17th, 1961, is an English film director and producer. He has primarily worked in the action genre, Andrew, most notably as the director of Con Air, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, The Mechanic, and The Expendables 2. Outside of action, he has also directed the films The General's Daughter and When a Stranger Calls. I think he did the remake of that old classic horror film. Prior to his film career, West served as a director for music videos, including Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. Let's check it out, Gru. Rick's Ass Page, second column in pink. It's Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley.
Bar Mitzvah of Evan Moody today.
So
I used to play that at every single one. That was like the opening
song. Let me ask you about the song. Is that a great pop song?
Sure. It's lasted forever. It's been around 40 something years.
Has it been really that long?
Yeah, it's like the mid-80s, I think. I remember it being a hit at my generation's Bar Mitzvah tour. You know, when I was 13. I'm 48 now. What is that? That 45 years? Oh, no.
No, 48 minus 14?
Yeah, what's that?
8 minus 4 is 4. 4 minus 34 years.
All right, so it's
35 years.
35 years, so absolutely.
Wow.
Kids today know it.
That's incredible. Yeah. Dick Astley's been around for 35 years. Well, that song. That song.
Can you name one other one? I know there's another famous one.
I think
but
he
really...
did one other one that had some note, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, but that you know, kids know that song. Like, it's familiar. It's familiar to kids. It's, you know, it's in a lot of, like, TikTok videos and stuff.
Is Rick Astley Never Gonna Give You Up? Is that the greatest one-hit wonder of all time? It is a pretty...
I wouldn't call it the greatest. If I had to pick the greatest one-hit wonder of all time, it'd be Take On Me, Aha.
Really?
That would be... Because I think that's an incredible song, and I can't name one other thing that group did. That's one of my favorite songs ever. It's a great song, Take On Me.
What do you think? I just gave you a little bit of Simon West's filmography. You're familiar with him as a pure director, auteur? What do you think?
I wouldn't call him an auteur.
Well, you know what
we
I mean.
But we were talking about this off air yesterday, I think, about certain kinds of directors who are basically there for hire, saying, yeah, you got something you want me to direct? Hit my price. I'll get there and I'll bring in what you want. Then you have auteurs who basically direct their own visions. So it was obvious that, from what I remember about The Expendables, Stallone wrote and directed the first one. And then he wrote this one, but I don't think he wanted to direct. Directing is a 24/7 job for way longer than you film. You might film something for 3 months, but the director's job is not done until that movie's ready to come out. So I don't think Stallone, in his age, really wanted to direct anymore, and they hired this guy who was a proven talent at, you know, action franchises. Well, he did, Con Air wasn't a franchise, but it was basically one of those Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, The Rock, Nicolas Cage type things. And it was, I remember it being pretty good. I liked Con Air. It wasn't great,
right,
but I liked it. So, you know, good choice for a movie like this. If Stallone doesn't want to do it himself, I got no problem with it.
Simon West starts off in music videos, progresses to film. I think we've heard this before. Any thoughts on the music video to film progression for directors?
Yeah, that's if you're not a Spielberg or Scorsese or people like this, you have to start somewhere.
Right.
So you have to start. A lot of people start in music videos. They'll start in TV. They'll start. You know, they'll make short films. They'll do whatever they can do to show people what their directing style is. And if that's, you know, they don't even have to like the music video. They just have to show that they can direct. That's why a lot of them do that. You got to start somewhere. So it makes sense. And it seems like he was born in 60 something and he was directing Con Air in the early 90s. So that means he must've had some pretty good success as a music video director.
You mentioned, so without giving away your thoughts on Expendable 2, Expendables 1, Stallone directs.
Yeah.
Written and directed.
Yeah.
Expendables 2, we know he has a writing credit. He doesn't direct.
Right.
Are we suffering here a little bit as a film fan from 1 to 2? Does it suffer with Stallone not at the director's chair?
Suffer is the wrong word. There's definitely a difference in tone and the way Stallone is a very underrated director.
We've said that before.
We've talked about this before. So there is something missing that was in the first one. I can't really localize it, but there is a difference. Absolutely. I wouldn't say suffer though. I would say different, which could be good, could be not good. I won't say suffer.
Favorite movie Stallone directed?
Oh God. I would have to say probably Rocky III.
Mm, interesting.
It would either be Rocky III
or the
fourth Rambo.
That's a good one too.
And you know, he didn't direct the first Rocky. Okay. I'm going to say Rocky Balboa. I like Rocky Balboa better than Rocky III.
Okay.
So I'll say Rocky Balboa is his best job as a director. And Rambo and Rocky III are tied for second.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Expendables 2 is rated R for strong, bloody violence throughout.
Thank God.
Well, the tagline for The Expendables is Back to War. Gru, plans for a sequel to The Expendables were in place before the film's release in August of 2010. Stallone said, quote, I have an idea ready to go. I'm going to try to do something that's quite radical. On April 18, 2011, Stallone confirmed that he would not be repeating his directing duties in Expendables, making a list of directors to serve as his replacement. April of 2011, the film was given a scheduled release date of August 17, 2012, and a teaser poster was released. August 2011, it was reported that New Image Millennium Films was in negotiation with an unnamed Chinese distributor. This distributor would produce the film in exchange for a Chinese actor, Donnie Yen, being cast and filming in China. The partnership was considered to make a Chinese release of the film and would have granted Millennium Films a larger share of its Chinese revenue. However, the partnership fell apart before production began. However, another Chinese studio, LeVision Pictures, invested in the film. Lionsgate Films purchased the North American and United Kingdom distribution rights to the film for $35 million. All right. I just thought this was interesting. Literally, negotiation with a company in order to get a Chinese release and have a high-profile actor. I know, I've heard of Donnie Yen. I think he's a pretty big action star out there. U.S. films penetrating the Chinese market, tough. I don't know. What I don't know too much. Do they show American films in China?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but there are a lot of...
highly edited?
Sometimes. You know what? It's weird. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head right now, but I know there have been some issues with movies that they have tried to release there that had like one objectionable thing. There have been companies that have been willing to edit, and then there have been companies that have not been willing to edit. So it's just, I don't know much about it. It's just weird. But this probably has nothing objectionable to China. So it was probably a deal that everybody was okay with. I don't really know what I heard about a movie that they had this problem with. I'm drawing a blank.
Getting release rights in China?
Yeah, because China is a big market.
A huge market.
It's a big market, so they want to get as much as they can, especially a movie that they don't expect to be gangbusters in America, which I don't think they expected The Expendables to be, at least not the second one. I think they expected it to do well, but not off the charts. So that's why they go and tap into whatever international markets they can. I think Millennium is known for that. Millennium is known for like just sort of digging in the dirt. Like it's almost like the current version of Canon in a way, but a lot more money and certainly better quality movies.
Yeah, because Canon was kind of schlocky, right?
Yeah, but that was their calling card.
Right. What about film companies' rights and guaranteeing actors? You know anything about that?
I don't think that has much to do with the film. No, I really don't, because it's changed so much.
States even?
I mean, yeah, it's changed so much.
Agrees to the rights, we're going to deliver X actor will be in this project.
Yes, there are companies. It's like you got the big companies like Warner Brothers and Paramount. Those are now basically, I think, like distributors. So they don't have much to do. They'll basically pay for the rights to distribute a movie, which means they can make, they pay for the rights to distribute a movie they believe in. Okay. That'll make them money. Okay. But it's not really them who makes the movie anymore. It's the,
But would a company that distributes based on their fee mandate that this actor needs to be in this project?
I don't think in this country, but I could see China doing something like that.
All right.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little cheer about the rating for the film. Let's talk about that for a little bit. January 19, 2012, Stallone stated that the film was being aimed at a PG-13 audience. Unlike the first film, this would have made the sequel available to all viewers over 13 years of age and younger children with parental consent. The reported change received negative perception. Speaking to Ain't It Cool News about the change, Stallone said, quote, "The PG-13 rumor is true, but before your readers pass judgment, trust me when I say, this film is large in every way and delivers on every level. It was reported that the change was requested by Norris before he take part in the film because he did not appreciate the swearing in the film."
What?
However, these plans for a more family-friendly rating did not succeed, and the finished film was rated R. When the adult-oriented rating was confirmed shortly before the release, Simon West stated, quote, "The shooting style and dialogue from day one, it was R-rated. Gru, we've talked about this before. I can hear by your reaction you were happy with the Expendables 2 being a rated R release.
When has it ever worked to dumb it down to PG-13 coming from an R? When, name one time that strategy worked. I'll give you times that it almost killed the franchise, or killed Die Hard. Okay, Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard was PG-13. John McClane is an R-rated character. I'm sorry. That just doesn't work any other way.
I have one right off the top of my head.
Go ahead.
Alien vs. Predator.
There you go. There you go. Coming to America sequel, that was bad anyway, but it was certainly not helped by the fact that Eddie Murphy has to be reined in. So it never works. Look, there are a lot of people who are much smarter than I am about money. Maybe the lower rating or the PG-13 does make a difference in revenue. I haven't seen any evidence of that. All I see is negativity when that happens. I've never seen it actually work the way they want it to. So why they would even say we're going for that, just make the movie and whatever it is, it is. I've been getting into R-rated movies since I was 9. And so have you. I don't see how that really makes a difference. It's bullshit. It really is. Do you agree?
I just show my illegal ID.
Well, I didn't even have to do that. I'm just saying, you know, you buy a ticket and then you go into the whatever theater you want.
No, I absolutely agree. They do it really for economics. They want to expose the film, I guess, to a larger audience.
But it never works.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
You think they would learn their lesson. Well, I'm glad they did for this one. They did not for Expendables 3. Expendables 3 was PG-13.
Mm.
And suffered because of it.
I think I knew
that. Suffered because of it.
What was Expendables 4?
I mean, probably, I don't know. Okay. Probably PG-13. I don't know.
Filming on a budget of... I gave it away. No, I didn't give it away yet. All right. So did I call out the number?
You didn't call out the number. You said 100 something.
Oh, fuck.
Just go. It's okay.
100 million.
It was exactly 100 million?
Yeah. Expendables 2 started filming September 29th, 2011. It lasted 14 weeks. Here's the interesting thing. On October 27th, 2011, while the second unit stunt team was filming in the Ogunanvo Reservoir, 15 miles... so they were filming in Bulgaria.
That's where I had my first apartment.
Well, stuntman Ken Kun Lu was killed, and another, Nuo Sun, was critically injured in a staged explosion on a rubber boat. Sun underwent a 5-hour operation, which left him in stable condition.
That's terrible.
Let's talk about this for a second. One stuntman killed, another seriously injured on the set. I would imagine, Gru, heads are rolling, massive lawsuits and payouts. Gru, what do you know and thoughts about these tragedies that may happen on movie sets?
I don't know much about them. I just know that that's exactly what they are. They're tragic accidents. Is it due to negligence? Obviously, there is a level of negligence when anybody gets hurt on any kind of thing. These movies, especially $100 million blockbuster, quote unquote, is going to be insured up the ass. So there was probably a very quick settlement. I don't know. I didn't even know this.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was paid out very, very quickly and easily, unlike other ones we've heard about.
Mm.
The big companies, they have protocols in place for things like that.
I mean, I'm assuming if there's a level of negligence, the payouts can be fairly massive on a family. I hate to say it, but to make it go away.
Hell yeah. But, you know, if you're spending $100 million on a movie that's going to bring in $300 or $400 million worldwide, and you have to give $15 or $20 million to the family of a stuntman who died, that's, to me, that's tip money to them.
Well, and you're telling me it's insured as well. So they're probably paying these insurance companies quite a premium.
But then their rates go up, I'm sure, just like anybody else's insurance. But shit happens. I mean, it doesn't forget death for a moment. Like, Harrison Ford has been notorious for getting injured on movie sets, you know. So I'm sure there are legal parts to that as well. Workman's comp and things like that. It all plays a part. It's just like any other business. They just, you know, it doesn't seem to go public, like other
controversies do.
Yeah. I think my first time I've ever heard of a death on a set was the Twilight Zone movie.
Yes.
I was pretty young at that time, and they had some kind of grainy footage.
Yeah.
Like a helicopter, I think, fell on somebody.
I know exactly what it was. Yeah. It was Vic Morrow, the actor. He was the bad coach in the Bad News Bears.
Was he killed?
Yeah. He and two little Vietnamese children were killed. Back and little Vietnamese actors, you know, in the story, he was saving them, and he was carrying them to safety through this lake, and a helicopter was supposed to simulate, you know, landing in front of them, and it ended up landing sort of on top of them, I think it decapitated two of them. But killed all three. And John Landis was the director of that. And I don't think he's ever actually, his career never really recovered, even though he sort of tried. Like, he had a couple of hits, but like he did Coming to America after that, he and a couple other ones, but he never, he was huge before that. Animal House he did, and Blues Brothers, but he was never able to get back because he was, I know he was taken to court. I don't remember or know what the end result was. But yeah, I do remember that. That was awful. And there is footage of this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gruel, let's take a look at the expansive cast for The Expendables 2. Sylvester Stallone as Barney Ross. Jason Statham as Lee Christmas. Jet Li, Ying Yang. Yin Yang. Oh, boy.
wonder who that part was written for.
Dolph Lundgren as Gunnar Jensen. Chuck Norris as Booker. Jean-Claude Van Damme as Villain. Bruce Willis as Church, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Trench, Terry Crews as?
Don't remember.
Hail Caesar?
Hail Caesar.
Sounds like a salad. Randy Couture?
Forgot his name in the movie.
Toll Road? What is
Toll
this?
Toll Road.
Liam Hemsworth?
Dead Meat.
Billy the Kid.
Billy the Kid.
They had a couple others.
Stallone is notorious for writing these names, weird names.
Oh my gosh!
Even in like Rambo,
Gunnar Jensen.
Like even in Rambo, he's with the mercenaries. He's like, they call me Schoolboy. Like, yeah, everybody's got a weird nickname. It's cool. It's like the A Team. I like it.
Grow kind of to me feels like an all-star game, maybe instead of a cohesive cast, but. Let me throw it to you. Thoughts on the casting for The Expendables 2?
100% an all-star game, and that's kind of why I like it. Okay. If you think I'm going to The Expendables looking for plot, I'm not interested. I'm interested in seeing our guys have fun and us have fun by extension. So that's my purpose for going. I don't really care. I couldn't tell you what the plot was. A bad guy was trying to do some bad shit, and these guys were trying to stop it, just like the first one.
Was the Expendables Stallone's idea to sort of bring back these 80s action stars into into a high-profile kind of deal?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was his brainchild.
Was this knocked around for a while?
That I don't know.
Interesting.
That I don't know.
All right. Interesting.
I don't think so, because I think he came up with the idea kind of after – he did Rambo 4, and he just saw some life in the older action hero genre and just got the impetus to get the band together, you know, for as long as they could. I think that was it.
Let's have some fun. Was Steven Seagal ever offered a role in The Expendables? I believe I thought I heard yes, but he turned it down.
I don't know anything about it other than what you just said. I know he was wanted for it. I don't know why he turned it down. I'm guessing it might have if it was for the first Expendables.
I don't know.
Look, Seagal.
You've always said doesn't play well with others. So.
Yeah. Well, we know that, and he probably would have a tough time sharing the screen or sharing credit with, you know, above the title with a lot of those guys. Mm. He seems to be for a big, tough dude, he seems to be one of the most insecure whatevers. So that's unfortunate because it looked like he could have had some fun with this.
Did Jean-Claude carry momentum from JCVD into this pretty high-profile role?
I don't know because I hadn't seen I wasn't that familiar with JCVD. The movie before this.
But it's generally thought to be his overall best performance.
Yeah, but I don't even know which came first.
JCVD, then Expendables.
All right, then maybe.
JCVD was 2008, then The Expendables 2.
Maybe, but I got to think that Stallone probably wanted Van Damme for the first one.
Maybe.
For a role.
I don't know if I don't know that background.
I would think so. If he's making his list of all these you know, people, he had to have been on it, I would think. I would hope.
Gru, Expendables 2 contains approximately over 1,547 digital effect shots. A lot of filming was in the Dvanshka cave. The opening sequence of the film was shot in Bulgaria during the winter, but it was meant to take place in tropical South Asia. So they used digital effects to remove snow and the deciduous trees present and replace them with tropical flora. So there's some controversy. On November 16th, 2011, the production received a fine it's not a lot, but a couple of $1,000 from the Bulgarian Environmental Protection Agency for unlawfully removing shrubs and small trees from the entrance of the Dvanshka cave. Permits have been obtained and allowing sets to be built in the area, including a bridge to the cave. Environmentalists complained that filming could damage the cave, home to about 40 endangered species. To avoid further problems, the producers agreed not to film explosions, car chases, and fires near the cave. However, later that month, Bulgarian environmentalists stated that the bat population in the cave had been reduced by up to 75%. Nikolay Saimov of the Center for Bat Studies and Protection at the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences blamed the Expendables 2 production for the reduction. January 16, 2012, the Vallejo Tarnovo Appellate Prosecutor's Office overturned a ruling by the Lovec equivalent to prevent an investigation of what environmentalists stated to be excessive number of dead bats found in the cave after filming. The European Commission became involved, contacting the Bulgarian Ministry of Environment and Waters for information about the dead bats. The Bulgarian Ministry and Bulgarian Academy of Sciences conducted their own probe, stating that the bat kill was within normal parameters. Wow. I just thought this was interesting. On February 23rd, 2012, a Bulgarian court ruled that the crew had violated its filming licenses. Are you familiar with film in local environments, animal populations? Have you been on productions where there's, you know, obviously there's a much in 2024 heightened awareness of environment and animal cruelty and things like that. Anything, you know, anything about this stuff? I found it interesting.
Yeah. The number one, I have a question and a comment. I'll do the comment first. The only thing I can think of is that sometimes big American film crews think they can go outside of America and sort of make their own rules. And it's starting not, it may have used to be like that, but it's not like that anymore. So that's the only thing I could think of there. But my other question to you is, and I don't mean any disrespect to whoever is offended by this, but what do bats do for us?
Stop it.
No, I'm serious.
Stop it.
We do nothing but run from them.
Stop.
We're afraid of them.
I understand.
So what's wrong with, I mean, is it a God's creature thing?
Yeah, I'm not for over bureaucracy either, but you know, you got to be kind to the local environment.
Okay, but bats can be dangerous.
But everybody has a role somewhere. You know what I mean, in the ecosystem. So
all right, I mean, yeah. So so they paid a couple $1,000s. That shows you how much Bulgaria loves their bats.
Yes,
pay us $2,000 and we'll make it go away. Stallone's probably he signed a paper and say, here, go sell it. There's your $2,000.
Andrew Griffiths, kill all bats.
I didn't say that. I'm just why are we going out of our way to protect them when all they do is kind of chase us away and bite us and give us rabies?
I mean, I would imagine nowadays.
And hang upside down.
I would imagine there are people just on sets whose job is probably to maintain
100%
local regulations with environment.
Oh, they got
animals.
Somebody for everybody.
Okay.
They got so many people hanging around that thing to make sure that everybody's doing everything right.
All right. Well, I think that's a good thing, but who knows?
It is a good thing. It is a good thing.
There was an Expendables 2 video game, Andrew. The Expendables 2 video game is a downloadable 4-player cooperative shoot 'em up video. Excuse me. That's a teeth whitening. Post teeth whitening.
Yeah.
It was published by Ubisoft for PC, PlayStation Network, and Xbox Live. I don't even know any of this stuff. The game's plot is a prequel to The Expendables 2 with Barney Ross, Gunnar Jensen, Yin Yang. Oh, my God.
That's not Terry Crews?
No, Terry Crews and Hail Caesar appearing as playable characters. Lundgren and Crews voice their respective characters. According to review aggregators, Metacritic, and game rankings, the game received generally negative reviews.
Yeah, I don't see the interest in a game like that. I wouldn't be. Especially, like, the only reason I would be is if they all, like, provided their likeness and voices.
Like, yeah, that's weird. Yeah. It sounds like only two.
Because there are some games that do that, like the Godfather game.
There's a Godfather game?
Yeah, and it's basically Grand Theft Auto, except with all the Godfather characters and the voices, and they all did it, even Marlon Brando. The only one who didn't do it was Al Pacino.
Really?
But James Caan did it.
De Niro?
De Niro, his character wasn't part of the game. It takes place in the later part of the Corleone saga. But yeah, I like it when they do that. If they don't do, like, I bought a Terminator game because Arnold Schwarzenegger voiced the Terminator. So it was fun to play for 5 minutes. And then you realize, all right, I can't get that $60 back. But I'm not a huge gamer anyway.
Neither am I.
But I can't see it. There's nobody I know who is a gamer who said, oh, you got to get the new Expendables
game. I'm assuming this is already dreamed up as part of the marketing of the film.
When
these rights are sold and they're filming, they're going to have people work on the video. I mean, they're trying to maximize every dollar, right?
Yeah, I think they probably bit off a little more than they can chew, meaning thinking that it would be bigger than it actually was.
Expendables 2.
Yeah, all the franchise itself. You know, I definitely think it made money. Otherwise, there wouldn't be four of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they expected it to be a more of a phenomenon than it was. And that probably speaks to I don't want to give anything away, but the quality maybe, you know, if they were considered to be better movies, I'm not saying what I thought, I'm just saying the consensus. If they were considered to be better movies, I think, you know, merchandising and tie-ins would have worked, but you don't see Expendables t-shirts out there. You don't see Expendables action figures, or maybe you do. I don't know. I haven't, because I don't think it was, as huge as they anticipated.
Okay. Yeah. I just think the first one's so unique. All-star game, 80s action stars. I think the second and third go around maybe loses some of that specialness. You know, you finally saw Stallone on screen with this guy. You know, you sort of this dreamed about these scenarios. You know, Stallone on screen with Bruce Willis. Maybe the second and third time, it's just not as special.
Well, here's the thing about that. Because in the second one, they spend a lot more time on screen together than they did in the first one.
Okay.
In the first one, it was basically a 3-minute scene inside a church. And that was when Schwarzenegger was still governor.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all he could give.
Right.
And then the second one, as you saw recently, they both have significantly larger roles than they did in the first one. So I'm going to be interested in your notes about the box office of 1 and 2 to see which one did better. And critically as well, because I really don't know.
All right. Well, I got two. Well, you'll have to look up one.
Okay. All right.
The plot for The Expendables 2 grew as followed. After a successful rescue mission of a Chinese millionaire in Nepal, CIA agent Church, Bruce Willis, meets Barney Ross and asks him to travel with his team to Albania to retrieve the content of a safe in a plane that has crashed. Church sends the specialist Maggie to go with them. Soon they find the plane and Maggie takes a box from the safe, but while returning from the plane, they find that their sniper, Billy the Kid, played by Liam Hemsworth, has been captured by a group of men under the command of the villainous Villain, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme. He asks them to put the weapons on the ground and deliver him the box, otherwise he would kill the hostage. Barney and his group do exactly what was ordered, but Villain kills Billy the Kid before leaving in a helicopter. Barney asks Maggie what was inside the box. She tells him it shows the location of a large mine of Russian plutonium. Barney and his men decide to track down Villain and his group known as the Sangs and kill them. Oh, let me get a sippy real quick.
of the soda you're not allowed to drink?
Lemonade. Crew, are you ready for some Nothing Worthwhile movie fun facts?
I am absolutely ready for some fun facts.
All right, cue it up, my friend.
Nothing Worthwhile presents Fun Facts.
All right, crew, Nothing Worthwhile movie fun facts are brought to you by New Life Center. Celebrate love and beauty. Experience a transformation like never before. It's kind of like what we did today.
You're damn right. I am rejuvenated. Yeah,
we've been whitened and waxed and cleaned and... let New You Services inspire a new sense of beauty within you. Book an appointment at New You Life Centers. They're ready to see you. Whether you're a returning patient or in the beginning of stages of becoming the new you, they're excited to be part of your journey. Give them a call at 602-274-0068. Check out all their social media. Check out New You on Instagram at New You _Life Center. Thank you to New You Life Center. I just have a picture of Stephen Gruthius laughing in my head as I'm reading these commercials. All right,
Gru. Softest hands in the business, by the way.
There you go. Gru, Sylvester Stallone asked Chuck Norris to include a reference to the Chuck Norris facts, a popular internet meme in the screenplay. Norris's wife, Gina O'Kelly, suggested him the one with the cobra. Chuck Norris was bitten by a cobra, and after 5 days of excruciating pain, the cobra died. Isn't he asking, wait, what about that cobra?
Yep, and I've heard that before. I heard that, but I remember when I saw the movie, I'm like, he stole that from... don't you remember those things, though?
Stupid movie fun facts.
No, they were great. Those were great.
No, because I have, like, somebody bought me one time a Chuck Norris calendar, and it's all just funny, like, you know, like... Winter doesn't... Chuck Norris controls winter.
Yeah. So I did laugh at that line in the movie.
Gru, Sylvester Stallone explained that his casting was looking particularly for actors who had not experienced recent hits. Quoting Sly, I like using people that had a moment and then maybe had fallen on some hard times and give them another shot. I like those kind of guys.
So where was Dusty Rhodes? Is that all right?
I like those kind of guys. Someone did it for me, and I like to see if I could do that for them. I actually was kind of touched by this quote.
I'm intrigued, though.
Yeah.
What's he talking about?
He's talking about actors that are bruised.
And I'm wondering who he's referring to who did it for him.
I'm sure he's been given breaks and people helped him out along the way.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that he's looking for guys. Try to bring him back to relevancy.
I love that.
The film reveals that Gunnar Jensen earned an advanced degree in chemical engineering, then abandoned his science career to work as a bouncer in order to impress a girl. Gru, Dolph Lundgren earned a chemistry degree from Washington State University in 1976, a chemical engineering degree from the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm in the early 80s, and a master's degree in chemical engineering from the University of Sydney in 1982. Lundgren walked away from a science career to work as a bodyguard for his then-girlfriend, Grace Jones. While stuck in the mine, Gunnar refers to himself as a Fulbright scholar, which Lundgren achieved in real life.
I did know that.
You knew?
He's a smart guy, yeah. He's a smart guy. Not the best actor, but he's definitely got a... I don't think he would ever claim to be, but he's definitely got a hell of a screen presence. I wonder if the science world was robbed of one of its great minds. I mean, maybe we'd be, you know, maybe we'd be 10 years ahead of where we are now if you didn't have to go and, you know, punch Rocky's heart through his chest in 1984 or 5, whenever that was.
Very impressive, though, in terms of his academic career.
Damn right.
Can't take anything away from
him. Not a thing. Absolutely not.
Gru, this was Arnold Schwarzenegger's first full film after he left the office as governor of California.
Yeah. That was one of the big things for me. I was really happy to see Arnold sort of back on the block, as it were, and to see them together and working together and, you know, in more than just that little one scene in the first one. That was a bit, to me, that was worth the entrance fee for this movie, to see that. And I thought they were terrific together. You know, they didn't have much time together, right. but when they were there, the sparks are there.
You gotta love it. Definitely have chemistry.
Yeah, you just gotta love it. So, you know, it's a novelty, yes. Could anybody have done that the role that was his? Absolutely. But he brings, just like everything else he does, he brings it up a notch.
Guru, you want to give a gander for the Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter rating? What do you think Expendables 2 got?
All right, this is a tough
135
one.
Critical reviews, 0 to 100%. What do you think Expendies 2 got?
I'm going
to
say Expendies 2. It probably wasn't a critical darling. I don't think it was reviewed as well as the first one. I'm going to say, I'm going to go a slick, even 50%.
You're not bad. I have 67%.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's very good for a movie like this.
What do you think Rotten
Tomatoes?
Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes. What do you think they gave The Expendables 2 in terms of an audience score based on 250,000 audience member reviews?
That's a percentage too, or a
percentage
letter?
As well.
I'm going to say it's probably higher. I'm gonna say like 80%.
67 as well.
Wow.
Both 67%.
Look at that. Interesting.
Guru, Tom Russo of the Boston Globe says the following: The Expendables 2 is lazily satisfied with repeating the first movie's formula, shortcomings, and grisly strengths alike. Just as the first movie was content to slavishly, ploddingly cover the hits of the 80s. You know what, dude, if you want to give a review, stop with the slavishling and the plottingly.
What'd you think of the movie?
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
David Hillebrand of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Nice to know American action stars, no matter how old they get, will never lack for gainful employment. James Beryl DeLelli from Real Views. Does exactly what it's supposed to do, no more, no less. Scott Tobias of AV Club. The Expendables 2 makes a franchise out of a novelty item. And the nostalgia kick is gone. It's a reminder that most of the 80s actioners were xenophobic and dumb, and many of its stars had more muscle mass than charisma. That's kind
Fuck
of,
him.
It's kind of a tough one. I won't say F him, but that's a little bit of a tough one.
I said it.
You did say it. Derek Malcolm of the London Evening Standard.
Fuck Derek Malcolm.
Someone more experienced in such matters told me that when Willis wears a wig in a film, it's generally awful. When he's bald, it's often okay. Here, he's hairless. What does this say?
I don't know what's he saying.
He's saying
it's okay.
Yes.
Well, gee, thanks. That's what they pay you for. Can I get that job? Writing little stupid blurbs that mean absolutely nothing and get paid.
Finally, Rafer Guzman of Newsday says, "Yay!"
Him I know. He's our guy.
All right. Well, he said
Long Island.
All right. Yeah, I get it. The Expendables 2 is a fun-loving throwback to the gloriously bad action films of the 1980s. Here's what I don't get. Why couldn't it be a throwback to the good ones?
That's a shot. That's a shot through the heart right there. That's
and you are to blame, darling.
Yeah, you give love a bad name.
I play my part.
You know what? I'd like to hear what he considers to be a good one.
Are you
a good overblown 80s action movie over a bad one?
All right, well let's talk about this real quick. That was about six pretty fairly big critical blurbs. Surprised?
No.
All right.
No, I'm curious.
Being rough on Stallone and the boys?
No, they're saying the same. Here's what's funny about those reviews. Because you know me, I've been reading movie reviews since I was very young.
Okay.
I used to like really look forward to the day a movie comes out, seeing how many stars is Newsday going to give it? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? You know, before we knew all of this weeks before that it came out. There was a different time. So I want to know what they're comparing it to. Like, this would fit sounds right
like
in.
Sounds like they're comparing it to the standard 80s.
So what? They're gonna say that the Delta Force is better than the Expendables?
No.
So what would they consider to be a good one? Die Hard? This is not the same thing. Die Hard is to be taken seriously. These are not. The canon movies were not. They were meant to entertain and blow shit up and have fun with familiar faces. So I'm curious as to what are they comparing it to?
Well, I don't know. I still say movies can be fun. Movies can be overblown. But if you're not, and I'm not saying this is not The Expendables 2, but again, if you want to sell me on wild action and unbelievable stuff, you got to sell it to me real and not a wink and a nod. You know, so if you know, for me to really buy into a movie.
Then I will say this. I will say that The Expendables 2 definitely does a hell of a lot more of that than the first one.
Okay.
I'll say that.
Cool. You want to take a gander at the box office gross for The Expendables 2?
Yeah.
I have domestic, international, and worldwide. So
okay.
You could. Why don't you go domestic? What did it make in this country, and then what do you think worldwide?
I'm going to probably overshoot a little bit, but I'm going to say it made 180, 190 million.
Domestically?
Domestically. I think it was a pretty big hit here. Could be way off. But
on this one, this is the first time I think you're off.
Oh, boy.
I have 85 million.
That's it?
Which is only 27% of the total take for
Good
Expendables
grief.
2.
That's horrible.
I have 85 million domestically, 229 million internationally, with a worldwide gross of 314 million. Yeah,
money's money, but that's bad for the United States, I think. I mean, you have arguably three, if not four, of the top action stars of all time headlining this movie. And they could only pull in 80 mil, huh? I mean, I could understand if the movie was terrible, but clearly from the reviews and the audience, it's not considered terrible. It's considered passable, which for an action movie like this is a good review.
Well, then let's get to your review. On a scale of 0 to 4 bombs, what do you give The Expendables 2?
I give The Expendables 2 3 bombs because I really did enjoy the movie from start to finish. Could it have been better? Of course. I do think they got a little too winky and naughty, especially towards the end. Even though I love when Bruce Willis and Schwarzenegger come back to join the final fight, I love it, but there are still times I'm like, you didn't really need to do that. Like, you didn't need to do the I'll be back. You didn't need to. You were already here. You already got me. You don't need the yippee-ki-yay. You don't need all that shit. Just let the guys have fun and do their thing. But I did really enjoy it. I truly loved how they used Chuck Norris in it. I liked the lone wolf thing. I liked how, you know, he came out to the I thought that was super cool. And I remember seeing it in the theater and the crowd get, you know, like giving a little cheer when that happened. I thought, since our guy here is Jean-Claude Van Damme, I am going out on a limb and saying this is my pick as JCVD's best performance. I think he was fantastic. He made an excellent villain.
Yes.
He was a douchebag who you wanted to choke out and beat the shit out. I don't even know what he wanted. I don't even know why he was a bad guy. All I know is I was loving him eat up the scenery. And I thought his fight with Stallone was great. And the only reason I'm not going higher is because I remember liking it better when I first saw it than when I rewatched it here, I guess a good 10 years later, maybe more. I didn't quite love it as much as I did when I walked out of theater. I'm like, that was good stuff. Here, I was like, yeah, it's fun. You know, so I'm going to stick with 3 bombs for Expendables 2.
I had the same reaction. What I liked about it, it's an all-star game of 80s action stars. It's a lot of fun seeing these legends on the screen. I agree. Jean-Claude is a highlight. He's great as the villainous Valain. Bad. I do think it loses a bit of the luster being the second Expendables movie. It doesn't just feel quite as special. And it's a straightforward plot. There's absolutely no nuance in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's just a straightforward shoot 'em up. I give it 2.5 bombs. Like I said, it's a lot of fun watching these action stars, legends.
that's just Excuse wrong. Me. He just gives it the...
What do you mean, what time? We're done soon. Okay. Please! Mom, can I please finish my? Yes. You stop picking my earwax.
He's joking now. He's in his parents'
Dad, please.
Yeah,
baby boy.
But the plot has more holes than Swiss cheese. I don't. And again, I get the same reaction. Like, I don't know. I watched it and I thought it hasn't aged as well in my eyes. It's very nice seeing JCVD back in a major production.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's real. It's a real straightforward shoot 'em up. And I guess for me, being the second Expendables, it just didn't feel quite as special as the first one.
Yes, it didn't feel quite as special, but I will say this in comparison to the first one, I think I enjoyed this one a little bit more.
Like Jet Li comes out for 2 minutes and he's done.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird. But the only reason is because I really feel like this one was a little bit more fun. But I will say this, the Expendables, the first one, had a realistic kind of feel to it, much more than this one. And the real missing link in Expendables 2 is Mickey Rourke. I thought he was great in the first one, and I missed that character. But I still give Expendables 2 the nod a little bit just because of the fun factor.
Yeah, I mean, the real core of the movie is that core group of, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to get a read on your earlier comments about Statham, but I think Stallone and Statham actually have really good chemistry in these movies. Stallone, Statham, Lundgren, Couture, Terry Crews. To me, that's that core group of expendable guys are the core, you know, the heart of the movie. And then, you know, the other guys kind of filter in as all-star appearances.
Yeah, but it suffers from the same fate as others that we've talked about, because if you're focused, you know, if the movie wants you to be focused on the lesser known guys, they're just going to bring in these familiar faces to sell you on that, and it just doesn't work. Because when Schwarzenegger and Willis and Van Damme are in the room, you're not looking at Terry Crews and those guys. You don't care. You forget they're there. You know, that's just, and that's what a lot of these kinds of movies suffer from. They think that that this eye candy is coming in, and what it's doing is distracting. Would I say that Expendables 2 would be an actual better movie if it wasn't it wasn't meant to be an all-star game? Probably. But it's not supposed to be a better movie. It's supposed to be more fun. And that, to me, is what it is. The first one is more, like I just said, was more focused on the team.
Well, okay, so that's because that's the first one. That makes sense.
Yes.
I didn't touch upon this in my research. I didn't see it. So, Jean-Claude, I'm assuming that's the big highlighted addition into the Expendables mix.
Yeah.
Was that marketed? I mean, was it like,
it was.
Like, hey, Expendables 2, come... Jean-Claude in a big return?
It was, because they do it on the posters. You can see, like, with so many people, and I've seen this in action, you know, when I was in the movie business, how they argue about where they're placed, like the order in which their names are placed in the thing, and who gets like and Dolph Lundgren or and Arnold Schwarzenegger or with Bruce Will. Like, so you can see on this one there are two, and it's weird. It's just very strange because it says like, and Lundgren and also Van Damme. I've never seen that before. And also, that's what it literally says on the poster. So it's like a battle of egos there, because they need to make sure these names are highlighted. Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Van Damme, and whoever the huge super, and Norris and those guys. The rest of the guys are just kind of in there. Mm. So if you look at the poster, you'll see that's what it says. It's really weird.
All right, crew. We're getting the high sign.
Everyone's like looking at us.
Are we late for something? No, we're not late for anything.
We have like 5 hours before we have to be here.
We're fine. Don't worry about it. Let's
dogs. We got to see the dogs.
Oh, we do have to see that. I got to walk them. They got to make pee-pees and poopies.
So do I.
Yeah, Gru, we'll skip one thing we're watching this week.
Watching anything.
Yeah,
I watched you get a facial. That's about it.
Yeah, well, we watched the DDP.
We did, but you know what? Let's make that be one thing we're watching this week, and let's both say that we liked what we saw, but it's not enough.
Skip this whole WWE run.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a sequel to that.
All right, Gru, I think we're gonna pivot here. So nothing worthwhile. I think let's do our WrestleMania preview for our next show.
Well, we have to.
Then we'll go back to Carl Weathers and Happy Gill.
That's gonna be next Van Damme.
No,
that's gonna be. I'm sorry, that's gonna be.
So our next nothing worthwhile, we'll do our WrestleMania preview. Well, predictions.
Yeah, we probably will end up doing a pre-show and a post-show.
Yeah, well, we'll do our preview. Yeah, we should.
We have to. What's the word? Supplement.
I mean, we'll probably get to saying goodbye officially to Carl Weathers, like in May or June.
Yeah. But I mean, like, let me ask you this. Well, I should ask you next week, but I'm going to ask you this now, because we still have to, like, after night two, even though we're working the next day,
we still got to like go out and get McDonald's and bring it home and eat in our respective coasts.
We do. You know, all right, let's keep those traditions.
Yeah, we got to do everything we can. We're not going to WrestleMania this year, to all the Nothing Worthwhile universe. We're not going this year.
Hopefully WrestleMania weekend is when my new wife goes away to California. I'm already
planning.
So we
can catch a red eye or something?
No. I can go to like McDonald's at 11 p.m. and get my Egg McMuffins.
Yeah, but yeah, we're not going. We're sitting this year out, but we will be watching every last moment of it because we're very excited about it.
Andrew, when we return back to Van Dammit, it's going to be our Van Dammit State of the Union. Maybe we'll throw in Missing in Action. Ryan Rebalkin, the great CEO of the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, will be joining us for a no-holds-bar intense discussion. Andrew, Van Dammit, State of the Union.
Can't wait.
Ooh,
a lot to say.
Out of the box.
And I can't wait to hear what you have to say, and I can't wait to hear what President Rebalkin has to say. I'm looking forward to the gang getting together. That's what I'm always saying. I'm saying I'd like to collaborate more. Well, thank you for coming up with this idea, Evan.
I think the last time he came on was for that Rocky III movie on Netflix that we watched.
Rocky IV.
No.
Rocky III.
We watched a movie with Frank Grillo.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like a tribute to Philly.
Was he part of that? I feel like the last time we did something, it was the Bon Jovi thing.
No, we did. He came on. We did that.
What was the name of that movie?
I forget. You have to look it up on your
phone. The First Night or something like that. Opening night, something. Yeah, I remember liking it.
All right, Andrew, we're done here. We got a lot more people to see, a lot more things to do, and somebody's getting married. So we hope everyone has enjoyed this podcast. Andrew, take us out of here,
ladies and gentlemen. It's been my privilege and my honor to be here with the great Evan Moody and the great Ms. soon to be former Miss Marie Verdugo,
yes,
and soon to be current Mrs. Marie Moody, after this incredibly love-filled and joy-filled weekend here in the great, the beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. Next time, folks, we're going back to where it all began, WrestleMania.
That's true.
We're going to be talking to you, giving you our pre-show and pre-show thoughts for both night one and night two.
Give our predictions.
That will be 2 weeks from now. We're going to let Evan have a little honeymoon period, but then we're coming right back in, on the horse for WrestleMania, followed by our State of the Union in the Van Dammit Last of the Action Heroes universe. And ladies and gentlemen, until then, I only have one thing to say to you. No retreat.
No surrender.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Knock Su Cow, everybody.